Hello there. Welcome to Socrates in the City. Today, I am in the city of New York. I'm usually in the city of New York. And today, my guest is Olivia Rheingold. She's a staff writer at the Free Press. She got her start in public radio, and she's writing a lot right now about the current mayoral election here in New York City. And we look forward to talking about that and other things. Olivia, so great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I really, I want to talk to you about so much, so we'll try to get it in here. First of all, when I reference the mayoral election, I'm staggered in a way, perhaps I shouldn't be, but staggered to think that somebody who is openly and explicitly a socialist has been leading in the polls and won the Democratic election. And my first question, and this one is tough, how do you pronounce his name?
Zohran Mamdani. He says in interviews that it has a soft H, and I've been thinking about that a lot. I'm like, so I don't know how to do the soft H. I need to ask him if he would only just give me a call back.
Actually, I'm only pretending to care. In all seriousness, we have to frame this because not everybody's up on this, but we just, in New York, had the primary, the Democratic primary.
Right.
And many people, myself included, were shocked that he won. Now, I've been saying Mamdani. I heard you earlier reference him by his first name.
Yeah, Zohran.
Zohran.
Yeah.
Has somebody made the decision that we're going to go with Zohran?
Well, it's how I think a lot of people reference him. It's almost as if it's like Obama, where people just said Obama. You just say Zohran.
And everybody says Hillary, which is weird.
Yeah, that's
true. You say
true.
Hillary, it's like,
that's
but
true.
It's, you mean
there
Clinton.
Is inconsistency, but it's also his slogan, or on his signs. It's not really a slogan, but it's Zohran for NYC. So it's kind of how he presents himself, too.
Okay, right on. Well, so we got that out of the way. I think we're done. That was the only thing that I really don't have. But we have to talk about the fact, or I want to talk about the fact, that he has put himself out there as a socialist. And before we get to him and what's happening in New York right now, I just want to define our terms, and maybe you can help me with this, because people say socialism, people say communism, people use terms,
right.
And I find that often we don't know what we mean when we use those terms. What is your sense of what socialism actually is, since you've been reporting on him?
Well, I just had to submit a request for comment to Zohran, because I have a lot of questions about what he means when he calls himself a socialist, but socialism, there's an aversion to private property. So it's all about boosting the working class.
Hold on.
Yeah.
That's big.
What?
An aversion?
Yes, it is.
Like
big.
That, to me, that's communism.
But it's not full-blown communism. So communism is, I think you could argue, the most... No, it is. It is the most extreme form of socialism, but it's a kind of socialism. In which
I think anarchy is the most extreme form of socialism.
Because anarchy, I think, is more individualist.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I know you were.
I know. That's where libertarianism like meets. It's like at some point
yeah.
they meet. Okay, yeah. But seriously, so when you just say that, I'm genuinely surprised. In other words, socialism, is there a line between socialism and communism? What would the line be?
Like, there's some private property in socialism.
How nice.
But the major industries, the means of production are owned by the state in socialism.
See, even the term means of production.
It's pretty radical sounding,
stunning.
But it's just the way it's just the standard language.
But I'm saying if I were, a socialist, the one thing I would say to my team, listen, whatever you do, we don't use terms like means of production.
How to make it more normal.
Ixnay on the oletariat prey.
So I guess just like, industries.
Yeah. But they say that, means of production. And
right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it does kind of send a shiver down my spine.
Well, so when you say that, though, what it makes me think, I wasn't expecting to think this, but that what we're in fact talking about is communism light. In other words, I would ordinarily see socialism as not quite, but that's pretty heavy. So it's in other
an
words,
aversion I'm to private
I'm
property.
Guessing,
yeah.
and I'm curious what you think. But my guess would be that if somebody is a communist, they understand that's not going to fly. So I'll say I'm a socialist. That's what it sounds like. In other words, it sounds like given the power, somebody like Zohran would pull toward actual communism, but he understands he can't say that at this point.
Well, one of the questions, I just submitted a request for a comment because I just finished going through 16,000 of his tweets. I read every single one of them going back to like 2012 or something. And I happened to find this old Instagram he used to have that no one seems to have figured out yet. And the profile picture is not of him. It's actually of Lil Wayne. And it's of Lil Wayne wearing a t-shirt that says communist. And it's him, you know, advertising the word communist.
You probably don't know this because you're young, but Karl Marx had a Lil Wayne t-shirt. So it's kind of a throwback.
It's a very,
very clever.
Wow, that's meta.
Throwback.
It's an inside joke between Lil Wayne Karl Marx.
So obviously now, so in all seriousness, he was like, at some point.
I wanted to know, that's what I asked them today. I said, did you ever identify as a communist? I assume it's a joke, but with every joke, there's a hint of truth. And so anyway, but that's one of the only markers I've found that I have no reporting or, you know, on whether or not it doesn't seem like he's a communist to me, but I did ask him that. So, but what does he believe in? So going through this expedition of his tweets, he is pretty critical of the markets and does believe that often the government needs to intervene to ensure a basic standard of living, like access to healthcare. It's unclear to me if he believes in the concept of rent.
Excuse me, we have to pause while I take that in. That's
a big
deal.
That's one of the things I wanted clarity on.
What do you mean the concept of rent? In my life thought of rent as a concept. Like, what do you mean?
Right. Well, because during COVID, when there was a lot of pressure on governors across the country to cancel rent, to freeze the rent. But anyway, I couldn't tell the way he was applying it sometimes. I think he was trying to cancel rent, like cancel rent,
right?
Period.
Yeah.
Like there should not be any rent. So I have questions about that. What I do know for certain, and what is also reflected in the plans he's put forward in his mayoral campaign, which he is expected to totally win, by the way, is he wants to build a lot more public housing. He thinks that the government, he basically thinks you have a right to government housing. And it's unclear to me if that means free housing.
Well, abolishing rent or canceling rent to me sounds like theft. In other words, you're a landlord, you have a space, you earned it, you paid for it, your father earned it, your mother earned it, you now own it. And you're renting it out, and somebody says, no, it's ours now, and we're going to decide. You know, that just feels like flat-out theft. And so it's fascinating how terms, you know, can define things when you say, well, we're going to cancel rent. And you say, well, what does that mean? You mean you're going to steal the income that I get from charging for rent, but it sounds so attractive to anybody paying rent. I pay rent, so it's like, that sounds so wonderful. And that gets to, I think, the appeal of candidates like that. They're selling you something, and the real question, of course, is can they deliver? You know, it's the old joke, the problem with socialism, at some point you run out of other people's money. So it's really attractive if you're struggling financially. And so I want to get to that, but I want to go back to the difference between socialism and communism. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been in America since the Cold War. It hasn't been possible to talk in any positive sense about communism. Socialism, though, always, it always feels to me like it's there somehow.
Mm, yeah.
What do you suppose it is in this cultural moment that makes it possible for somebody like Mamdani to talk about it so openly?
Interesting. So as you were talking about all the free promises, I think that that's like a classic analysis of Zohran's support is, well, of course people like him. He's promising all this free stuff. But it's actually, I think, a meaningful portion of his supporters. It's more because it's progressive. He's kind of delivering a sense of justice. I think that there's this real sense of aggrievement among Gen Z and millennials in the city that something is not right. Why am I basically a white-collar worker? Why have I worked so hard for this elite, exclusive job? Maybe some of these people, they went to great colleges, and why am I not on a home ownership track? And the landlord is the enemy. So it's not necessarily like, I want free rent so badly. It's more like a F you. There's kind of an underlying sense of anger, which is such an interesting part of Zohran, is that like the tone of it is often quite different than a Trump rally in terms of how Trump speaks, but there is a lot of similarity.
What is not different from a Trump rally? The only thing that's not different from a Trump rally is a Trump rally. But I know what you mean. You're keep going. Forgive me.
Oh no. Where Trump is often he's outwardly peeved about something. It's an outward attack. He kind of names and shames enemies.
Sure.
And Zohran is doing that, but in a really subtle way where it's really positive. Like, it's the kind of environment where it's like, high fives, guys. Like, it's, I think, what you would call toxic positivity. But Zohran, he has a huge smile that he's known for. And, for example, I just watched this clip. CNN recently asked him, one of their anchors just said, do you like capitalism? And he kind of like, you know, recoiled. But he was like, no. Like, the smile was huge. He was like, no, I don't like capitalism. So he's delivering everything with a smile. Sorry, I can't even remember what you asked me.
There was no question. There's so much here, but I think I'm old enough, amazingly, despite my youthful appearance, to remember the mayoralty of Lindsay in New York City. When I was a little kid living in New York City, the attractive, progressive, liberal at the time was called mayor was John Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very similar dynamic because he promised what any young, good-looking candidate promises. They promise hope. And youth,
exactly.
And you know, you get that from JFK and RFK, and it's hard not to be swayed by that.
I mean,
it's normal, human beings are swayed by that. But of course, in the end, the question is what do they deliver?
Right.
And Lindsay delivered what for your average New Yorker turned out to be like a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people were routinely mugged, assaulted. By the time you get out of the 1970s, like, New York is bankrupt, and people fled the city. And so I wonder, I just have to ask the question now, really it's a rhetorical question, but whether all of the young people that are attracted to this candidate 10 years from now, will they still be in the city, or will they have fled to the suburbs like so many people did, you know, back when? I mean, that's ultimately the question. Do you, as you cover him, I heard you talking earlier about the different coalitions. Talk about that, about who has been attracted to his message.
Yeah, so I think that the caricature of a Zohran voter which is true, this definitely is a meaningful portion of his base. I guess you would call it his base, is a college educated. Often these are elite schools. A lot of his campaign staff went to Yale. But college educated probably makes somewhere between $100,000 to $150,000 a year, lives in what's called the Commie Corridor, which stretches from Queens into Williamsburg, Greenpoint, parts of Brooklyn.
Did you say the Commie Corridor?
The Commie Corridor.
That is very
That's
funny.
What the insiders call it. But yeah, so they probably live in Queens, Brooklyn, parts of Manhattan. Mm. There are even Zohran supporters on Staten Island. I think there are maybe...
Now you're just making stuff
up. No, that is real. That is real. And so, yeah, I guess that gets at my second point, which is that's the caricature, is the yuppie, the progressive yuppie. But his coalition is actually really impressive, where, and it includes a lot of immigrant communities, especially Muslim immigrants and South Asian immigrants too. And then, like I said, he has supporters in basically every type of community, in every borough. He even has supporters on Staten Island.
You said that before, and I still don't believe you. But
obviously, Cuomo won Staten Island, but like he did get, I think it was at least 10,000 votes. So,
well, I mean, I think we have to say the most obvious thing: he's a very good politician, and that's a big part of politics, fortunately or unfortunately.
At
the heart of everything, of course, he's tapped into something. When we're thinking about young people, for example, if you express the idea that there are some people who are really, really struggling and we should help them, mm-hmm. we live in a culture in America, thank God, where people care about the poor. They care mm-hmm. about people who are struggling. Mm-hmm. And so you're tapping into something that really is there.
Right.
Why do you suppose he has been able to do that more effectively than Adams or Cuomo?
I think because he speaks in kind of familiar terms. And so I think the BLM movement never left us. I think that this is just the latest iteration of that. And I think that those yuppies that I was describing, like all of those people are, maybe this will make sense to you. All of those people, I think, posted a black square on Instagram during Black Lives Matter. You can figure that out if you didn't know that already.
Well, and of course, the BLM movement was only Occupy Wall Street, in another guise.
Reborn,
there is a simmering resentment that tends to express itself, in various ways.
So he's kind of just riding this familiar wave, these young people who were primed by BLM. But I think what you were saying about progressivism, like we want to help people who are disadvantaged, that's really interesting and I think speaks true to Zohran, because often what he says, it does sound excellent. Like his answer on Israel, for example, is... he won't say whether or not Israel has a right to exist or as a Jewish state. The answer he's figured out is, yes, I believe Israel has a right to exist as a state where all people have equal rights and there's justice for all. Like something like that, where the implication is obviously that there's apartheid, genocide, whatever, but it sounds like, oh, well, why wouldn't you want to have a state where everyone is treated equally? And so there's a lot kind of riding underneath it where when he's talking about disadvantaged communities or say, freeze the rent. Well, in New York City, not everyone is like a corporate giant behemoth of a landlord. There are small property owners, There are immigrants, there are black and brown New Yorkers who own property, and they don't want to see a rent freeze. So I think a lot of his language sounds inclusive, but then when you kind of peel it back, there's actually a lot of exclusion baked in there.
Yeah. Well, without a doubt. He's promising things. I mean, if I had to analyze it, I would say that Adams and Cuomo were taken by surprise, that they were not aware of the fact that a young, good-looking, well-spoken candidate, multi-ethnic somehow candidate, could ride in and somehow steal all the oxygen. I mean, that's to me the story, that it's not really much more than that.
I don't even know what to, I don't even know what to say to that, because a lot of people, they do still try to talk to me about Cuomo, Eric Adams, sometimes Curtis Sliwa, who's the Republican, who will obviously get some voters, but it doesn't matter what they're up to. Like, we have maybe 3 months and some change until Election Day. It's really hard to imagine how they could ever take Mamdani down. I mean, first of all three of them, the three challengers to Mamdani, are in the race. All of them are kind of refusing to get out. And so any anti-Mamdani sentiment is going to be split among three candidates.
Clearly.
But there's also, if you think of the 20, if you think of a 2016 type Republican, is there anything that you can do to make an establishment Republican appealing when you compare them to Trump?
Yeah.
No.
Right.
So you can't, like, Mamdani is doing something entirely new here.
Right.
And I think he is setting a national standard where basically anyone who is challenged by a Mamdani type, if they really are compelling like he is, like, if every establishment Democrat is challenged by a Mamdani type candidate,
yeah,
like, they will topple. Like, the establishment is over.
I think that's the headline, that the Republican establishment and the Democratic establishment are dead.
Yeah, totally.
And I think I can opine in saying that I think they deserve to die. I don't think, and I always find it comical when you hear Democrats talking about we need a better message or we need to, and you think, we're talking about truth. We're not talking about, like, scheming. What message can we put over on voters? The question is, do you understand the problems?
Right.
And do you have answers and can communicate those answers or those purported answers? And for sure, that's what's fascinating here, is that whether you're thinking about Joe Biden or you're thinking about Cuomo, it's like, meeny, meeny, tickle, euphorison. I'm quoting. The handwriting is, on the wall. It's like you've been waiting.
Was that Latin? What was that?
No one knows. that's the famous story of, Nebuchadnezzar or Belshazzar, that you've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. And basically, I think your average voter in New York or even across the country, they look at a Cuomo. And I just think probably they sense that they have ridden this for enough decades to know there's nothing here.
Yeah.
But I think the same thing is true on the Republican side.
Right.
And so, in a sense, we have two radically different kinds of options. We have Mamdani, open socialist, and then you have MAGA, whatever you want to call them, conservatives on the right. It seems like that's what this looks like as that happened here.
No, totally. I think for a long time, after Democrats lost repeated election cycles, they often would say, it's because we didn't go far left enough. And then there was the pushback, which was like, that's ridiculous. You guys are cuckoo. You need to be more moderate. Well, I think what we're learning is actually they were right.
Yeah.
The appetite actually is for a more far left candidate. When you look at polling I see it. I see the math going on. But when you look at polling nationally, there's a majority of Democrats want the leadership to topple. They want change. And when you look at AOC and Bernie, yeah. they went on this fighting oligarchy tour where they traveled nationally.
Yeah.
I went to one of their events in Pennsylvania, and they brought out thousands of people. And
yeah.
and some of these events were held in red counties. And
yeah.
so I think that there is a real appetite here for a bigger social safety net,
yeah.
Higher minimum wage, more regulation
yeah.
of companies. I mean, look at Luigi Mangione.
Do
look
I have
at the
to?
Response to that.
No, actually I'm not familiar with the Luigi Mangione story. What do you mean?
Really? The assassin alleged killer of the United Healthcare CEO.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course.
Yes, I figured.
Who can forget Luigi?
You know. Yeah, Luigi.
Yeah.
But look at the response that
yeah.
got.
Yeah.
And so I think that Zohran speaks to that. There's a lot of overlap there. The person who would be angry about Luigi Mangione and is taken in by Zohran's ideas.
Well, when you were just talking about how the We typically hear, and we did even in the 2024 loss,
right.
that some Democrats will say we needed to double down on the radical leftism,
right.
and then you had others say no,
right.
enough of that. Carville and company would be, we've had enough of this transgender,
right.
whatever. Shut up about that. Let's just talk about jobs. Okay. So you hear this over and over, but the fact is, I remember distinctly. When centrism worked for the Democrats, Bill Clinton never would have been elected. I mean, I remember his, famous sister soldier moment,
oh, right.
the moment that he distances himself from a very
right.
radical expression of,
right.
liberalism, and he tacks to the center,
mm-hmm.
and it is why he won. Obviously, Ross Perot helped him greatly by being a third-party candidate, but it's interesting that you're always talking about several things. You're talking about the candidate. Bill Clinton was attractive and young and was trying to channel,
mm-hmm.
The JFK,
right.
whatever. So that is a big part of it.
I think we're just so much more broken now, though.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And so it's interesting that now, because of that brokenness, people are looking for more radical
answers.
It's
partisanship. We're just a far more partisan country that actually kind of doesn't believe in compromising with our ideological opponents.
Yeah.
Zohran is very uncompromising. I mean, to get a lot of his agenda done, it will be interesting. He'll have to compromise. But here's the thing. I think it's possible he could be a success. This guy, comptroller Brad Lander, who Zohran and him cross-endorsed each other. I bet Brad Lander will serve in his administration and really make sure that Zohran is a success. I think that he has a lot of good people who are working for him who really want to see this through.
I just want to say, as point of order, the word comptroller has never been used at Socrates in the city before. So I think you get $50 for that.
Incredible.
I have to check, yes.
Wow.
No, it's interesting because there's so much here, and I think what you were just saying about the ideological divisions, what's interesting to me, at least I think it's interesting, is that typically when we talk about socialism or communism, we contrasted with capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it's not necessarily an economic argument. It is more an ideological argument. There are things that go along with the progressivism that expresses itself as socialism
mm-hmm.
that really has less to do with economics than with various kinds of postures, I guess, cultural postures.
Are you talking about, maybe this is what you mean, an overriding belief that goes along with socialism is looking out for kind of the most oppressed people in a society and prioritizing raising their standard of living?
Well, no. What I mean is that when I think of socialism or communism,
mm-hmm.
I think of big statism. I think of people who do not believe in the inherent sanctity of individual human beings.
Right.
They have deified the state somehow.
Right. That's the essential divide.
And so the state says, what's yours is mine, and I can take it from you. So I would call that theft, because I would say, you know, going back to John Locke, people have a sacred right to maybe not always property in the literal sense of property, but that each of us has something that cannot be taken away from us because of our inherent rights. And of course, that's in our Declaration of Independence. And that's the bigger divide. So because I think we can quibble about capitalism. Are we talking about actual healthy capitalism or crony capitalism? You know, that to me isn't the main question. The main question is, what is the role of government?
I here's the thing. I don't know that that's the overriding philosophy or approach of a lot of his supporters. I think they think of it more as a philosophy about justice. If that
well, no, that's what
sense.
I mean. Yeah. In other words, I think it all gets blurred. But the idea is, you know, you have to define justice. And if I say, you have something that I want, do I have the right?
Right.
Is it justice for me to take it from you?
Yeah.
Who gives me the authority to take it? And I guess a socialist like Mamdani would say,
would say that you're wealthy because the working class made you wealthy.
Right.
Because you stole from the working class. Right.
Right. And that's the more fundamental issue.
Totally.
Is what is justice? Is what you have actually yours? Who gets to decide whether you stole it? You know, should every Californian cede their property to Mexico? You know, those questions, they're sort of eternal questions, but they in some ways precede the, you know, technical economic issue.
I will say, though, that there is this phenomenon of a Trump Mamdani voter. I haven't yet met any. I'm going to go out and I'm going to knock on doors, because there are districts or blocks that Trump did performed well in. I mean, I don't know how many parts of the city he actually won besides Staten Island, but blocks where he actually got meaningful votes, these then went to Mamdani. And so the data shows that they probably are out there. And what you're talking about, well, I think that this is a huge thing that the GOP is going to have to wrestle with, because I guess what I'm trying to say is that the anger that, say, Luigi Mangione tapped into is actually so much bigger than the Democratic Party, than the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And, like, we can make fun of it and be like, do you want to go to a government-run grocery store or whatever? Which, like, no, it probably is awful. But if the GOP just makes fun of it, they really need to reckon seriously with this anger about income inequality, because that is real and you can't just kind of deny it out of existence. And that's when socialism does bubble up, is in eras with extreme income inequality.
Well, actually, oddly, what you said reminds me, going back to the Luigi Mangione story, there is a rage that people have against injustice as they perceive it. And I remember way back in the 80s when Bernard Goetz, the subway vigilante, this kind of odd, socially awkward man, he's confronted by four black youths threatened on a train. And what does he do? Pulls out a gun and shoots at them, which I would say is amazing, horrifying. Yeah. I don't know what, but the anger against basically New York government allowing subway riders to feel constantly threatened made a lot of people say, "Look, I'm glad he did it." Mm. And in the same way that people that have been, you know, abused by the system, you know, they express almost happiness that, you know, Luigi Mangione did what he did. And so those are the again, those are the deeper currents that mm-hmm. we're dealing with here, mm-hmm. this anger at something.
Right.
And then the question is, who can articulate what that something is and what the answers are?
Right. I think that this is, you know, Mamdani is speaking to this. And I think that basically any politician that takes that head on, like, there is so much appetite in this country for actual economic populism. And I think anyone who can embody that will do well. Mamdani, he talks a lot more about economic issues than race. Then when he is asked about trans issues, he's like, obviously the city is going to cover, sex change operations for undocumented people. He's very supportive of the LGBTQ community and has indicated that the city government should, or hospitals should continue to provide these services. But he doesn't try and showcase that. When asked about it, reveal it.
Because he's afraid of alienating the Jew-hating radical Muslim voters that he's depending on for his coalition. That's my guess.
It's basically, it doesn't poll well. It doesn't poll well. It might poll okay in New York City, but nationally, it definitely doesn't poll well. It's extremely divisive.
Why would he care about the national polling?
I don't know that he's looking at that, but I think he just senses that it's divisive and that there is less to gain by mentioning it than just downplaying
it. Oh, yeah, no. That's why I say he's a very good politician.
Right.
What do you suppose is the best argument against him? And I'll give you my thought, and you can tell me. My thought would be to say to people, listen, there is no way that he can deliver on everything he's saying. Everything he's saying is beautiful, but he's kidding you into thinking that there is the money available to do this. And I would also say that you don't know how bad things can get. In mm-hmm. other words, it's one thing to say things are horrible, we need to do something, but in fact, someone like this actually could make things much worse, and then you will leave the city. You won't complain about how bad it is, you'll leave. That's my sense. What is your sense of what the best argument is against him?
It's funny, because I haven't seen a good one yet, really. Besides, he can never get this done, which... okay, the voters don't seem to care, though, and that this is basically a fantasy, a lot of his proposals. Luckily, I'm not a politician, and so I don't have to argue the case against him, but I will say that I think that this is something that Cuomo and Eric Adams are struggling to figure out. They keep talking about experience and how you need someone who can actually get things done. Well, people didn't care about Trump, you know, and how Trump had never run for office before. I don't think, obviously, that's a different voting base, but this is not, like, the establishment is dead and over with, and I think that whatever the answer is, you have to basically convince people that the working class will be served by other solutions. And so... yeah, I think a big one is just like, well, this is going to lead to us taking on a lot more debt. And it's just, I think essentially you have to be able to prove that these things are going to make life worse for the working class.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there really is so much here. It seems to me that at the heart of all of this... is the youth. Mm-hmm. I know you've written about the enthusiasm that young people have for him, which really does remind me of the enthusiasm that young people had for RFK in the late 60s.
Mm.
It's mm-hmm. something that it's almost natural to expect that from young people. They're looking for answers, and they see somebody who embodies it.
Mm-hmm.
And so... It seems to me, and I want to know what you think of this, is that at this level, we've touched on it, but politics is all about personality. That
right.
somehow, because of how he talks and looks and the biography that he presents, it's a package that people are buying.
Right.
That seems to me ultimately what this larger mayoral race will end up being about.
Yeah. And, you know, that actually is one department that Eric Adams can kind of compete on, is Eric Adams is also really charismatic. He just hasn't figured out how to translate that so much on social media or really showcase that element of him. But Zohran, I mean, I feel like I know the man, like I've, and he's totally made me laugh before, like watching interviews of his. I mean, there are a lot of things that personally I don't agree with when it comes to his policies, but like he's extremely funny and charming, and I think is disarming, and he embodies a lot of what definitely a young progressive in Brooklyn prioritizes,
yeah.
You know? He's, I don't even know how to explain. He has a je ne sais quoi, if you will.
And I will. I'm afraid we're out of time. It's been wonderful, Olivia, to have this conversation with
yeah.
you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was great.